So it's my pleasure to introduce our speaker today, Alberto Di Melio from CERN, who was educated as an aerospace engineer and electrical engineer in Politecnico Milano and University of Birmingham, and later on worked on an interesting research project with the Italian Navy about mammals' communication and noise sensitivity.
That was a secret.
So, anyway, it is in your CV. And then joined to CERN and participated on various IT-related grid technological and other projects. And then departed from CERN, worked on particular private enterprises. And in 2003, rejoined to CERN again and became a software integration manager, and also participated as from 1906 as an appointed project leader of the ethics project, whose major goal was set up international automated build and test infrastructure dedicated to grid and other distributed software projects. And in the framework of that, he visited several times Budapest and became a little bit familiar with Hungary, collaborated with Hungarian enterprises as well. And just now, he was the coordinator of the CERN Quantum Technology Initiative and was the head of the CERN Open Lab, and just now started a new project as a coordinator of the CERN Next Generation Triggers project. And anyway, he has implemented, defined several collaborative research and development projects between CERN, academia, industry, quantum computing, and technologies for fundamental research applications. And we are interested what is going on now in CERN. And please, Alberto, tell us about your recent activity.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks a lot. And thanks, everybody. I mean, this so far has been already a very interesting day. You know, I would like to thank Gergely and Peter and other people for inviting me. The welcome was very warm already. I had a chance to eat on a non-moving train yesterday, which was very, very unusual. And this morning already I had the chance to see a number of very, very interesting things. So, as Peter said, so my role today, I'm the head of innovation in the IT department of CERN, and all my career has been about building relationships and understanding how to use technology for scientific applications in collaboration with industry, with academia, with other research labs, and try to understand how to what is the impact of new technology on scientific research, and vice versa, how scientific research can create impact on industry. So yes, I've been until December last year, I was in charge of the CERN Quantum Technology Initiative, which I designed together with other people and proposed 4 years ago and ran for 3 years. And then last year, I proposed the new phase of the Quantum Technology Initiative that is now started in January for 5 more years. But I'm not responsible directly anymore. It's still in my group of responsibilities, but together with many other initiatives to cover use of artificial intelligence, distributed computing, high-performance computing, and also the impact that this technology can have not only on scientific research, but also on societal aspect at large. You know, CERN has a very big responsibility. It's part of the mandate to be able to transition ideas and technology outside the specific scope of interest of energy physics towards other scientific disciplines and society at large. So with this presentation, I would like to give you a sort of overview of what we are doing today in collaboration with experiments, what are the trends that we see, and how we see the impact of new technology on not only on scientific research, but also on the impact on infrastructure and how the entire community needs to react to this technology, to use them, and also to be prepared to to use them, not only use them, but use them efficiently for the coming several, many years. So let me start. So we were discussing a bit earlier about reorganization. Everybody gets reorganized every few years, every few months sometimes. So the departments went through a reorganization 2 years ago to try to react and understand better how to support the scientific communities at CERN and in high-G physics in general. So today the IT department has four major functions as a provider, optimizer, pioneer, and connector. So these are keywords, but the idea is that the IT department needs to provide services to the entire community and needs to do it efficiently. This is the main mission. Of course, we need to keep optimizing what we have. This is part of the continuous improvement cycle of computing and data science and the IT operations. But then we have a big responsibility also on pioneering and connector. So to develop new technology and connecting what we do with everything else. Nobody, especially CERN, in my opinion, can work in isolation or can think of being the only entity on the planet to be able to do something. Nobody can do this alone. We need to do it in collaboration. So the two parts are split more or less in this way: operations and engagement with experiments and the CERN communities, and R&D and innovation. And of course, again, these two things are not disconnected. This is a continuous loop. As new technology is developed, understood, integrated, it becomes part of the service. It is optimized. New needs come. Are provided, the new technology has to develop. So it's a continuous cycle of operation. We developed and published an innovation roadmap at the end of last year that describes how this works and describes all the requirements that we collected from the LHC experiments, other experiments at CERN, the accelerator sectors, communities, but also soft requirements, not only in terms of technology, but the increasing needs to take care of, for example, energy consumption and carbon effectiveness, carbon awareness, green computing, and the impact on open science. So this describes everything. So what I'm going to give you is a highlight of those requirements and the areas we are looking at. What I'm going to describe is a material that has been developed not by me, but by a large number of people, researchers, scientists, engineers, working as part of all these activities. So very typically what we use, what is called an open innovation process. There are many definitions of innovations with various denominations, but the open innovation process is the most used one, is at the base of many scientific and research programs today. If you can just to name one, the European Commission has adopted the open innovation program, the open innovation framework many, many years ago, and it is at the base of the way the European Commission projects are established today. And it's essentially a gated process. So you have an initial ideation process that has to be as free as possible. We don't try to manage that. It has to come really bottom up. And if this stops, everything else stops. So this has really to be nurtured. Then some ideas are interesting for discussion, but they need some funding and some support. So they get into another stage. They have to be a bit more qualified, a bit more better described, and they can enter into piloting, development, and testing phase. And some of them really produce results and become final products and have to be put in production. And this cycles continuously. And this is done in collaboration, in continuous, what we call co-development with the communities and industry, with other research labs and academia. So this is another way of looking at this. Ideation is at the bottom. There is innovation coming from just doing things. So this is something that I think it is the same here, but for CERN, this is extremely important. There are a lot of discussion happening everywhere. Sometimes we call it innovation by coffee, or if you don't like coffee, innovation by tea. So you go to the restaurant and you talk to people, and this happens continuously. And then the project-based innovation is the tip of the iceberg where the major programs are defined. Now, this is what I'm managing today. So it's a full range of programs that go from internal activities, internally funded projects, through typical knowledge transfer, CERN-level programs like the Quantum Technology Initiative, the industrial relationship, strategic partnerships with other organizations and other international organizations, laboratories, and European project. So the idea is every program has a specific focus, but they all have to be managed coherently and consistently in order to produce some impact. And most of this today is external funds. So you see, there is there is a small portion of internal funds. The projects that are considered very strategic are funded by CERN or the IT department. But everything else today, we need to rely on external funding, not on CERN-based funding, which is mostly dedicated to the physics programs. So it's a lot of work to keep all this working together. Now, of course, the reason why we are doing this is the CERN and HEP program. So this is a very high level view of our reference. Okay, so I mean, you are physicists in this room. As you know, I'm an engineer. I'm told I'm an engineer and not a physicist many times. So don't worry, I made my peace with that. So we can say that we are still in the era of Higgs boson characterization, the precise measurement of existing known particles and slight and smaller. Smaller aspects of the standard model, but then of course the future is what is next beyond the standard model, dark matter, etc. So two big areas for which the programs are designed today. Run three today, the first phase of LHC, and then the regime of LHC, and looking at the future of the circular colliders. CERN has already a number of programs in place, and the HEP community has many other programs. In places to look at transversely of all these activities with a certain timeline. So we take that, and that is part of the community reasoning, and we are trying to map the technology needs on those needs. So today we have short-term objectives, medium-term objectives, and long-term objectives to try to move the technology and the support of the experiment across a number of directions. You can see a lot of keywords here, and this is a really flexible and keep being, keep being discussed and redefined. Now, more specifically, this is a map of a provisional long-term schedule for the LHC. Today, we are here in the middle of round three. It will be followed by a relatively longish shutdown period before the high luminosity, the first phase of high luminosity LHC starts. So, of course, this is the current current plan. It was a bit shifted towards the future because of many things that happened in the past few years. But this is still more or less aligned with the original plan. Now, depending on that, the expectation from the experiments, especially ATLAS and CMS, the bigger experiments, are quite interesting. So this is this. Models have been around for quite a few years. So this is the latest incarnation, the latest version of these programs. And you can see that, depending on, you have always two curves. One is called the conservative research and development, the top one, and the aggressive research and development. So depending on how much R&D we do on computing, on storage, the different types of platforms, of architectures, of how much we can distribute or aggregate, etc., you have different behaviors. But the thing that is common is that, of course, the needs in terms of computing, in this case, and storage of different interactive or long-term preservation storage, have all the same trend. So they will increase necessarily in the future. So it is a big problem to understand how to cope with this increase, not only from a cost point of view, but also from a technological point of view. Now, we try to look, experiments are doing this a lot, and we try to do the same, to look at what means this compromise, this aggressive R&D towards more conservative R&D, and what are the technologies that we should look at. This is a recent assessment of, one important thing is that, especially for computing, this more or less takes into account that the infrastructure will not change considerably. The expectation, the assumptions on which these curves have been designed is that the infrastructure will remain CPU-based, most of it, for the next 5 or more years. Now, this was a valid assumption until a few years ago, but clearly this is not a valid assumption anymore. So what is going to change? This is, we organized a number of workshops from the experiments trying to understand what are the requirements. And these numbers you see here, expect 50% of Atlas algorithms accelerated by GPUs, expect 30% from CMS and lesser scale from the other two LHC experiments, similar scale from ATS. These numbers in this term have started appearing only very, very recently. The reliance on accelerator platforms, because not only number crunching, let's say, but also because of the more and more massive use of artificial intelligence, of deep learning techniques is really increasing. And this is going to change a lot to the landscape of how those curves will move in the future. This is, this is from Atlas, especially for compute intensive activities. And this is a statement, consider the bulk of Monte Carlo simulation reconstruction could be targeted by GPU-based machine learning solution in the future. So order of 50% of atom computing model accelerated by GPU. This is the first time I saw myself this is said so clearly compared to past years. So in order to address that, we have mapped the different technology in these 5 areas: computing, data storage and management, artificial intelligence, open science impact towards the external, and longer term investigation on a number of technology. So I'm going to talk about this, not everything because it's too much. I will touch upon a few items and specifically talk more about artificial intelligence and quantum computing. So the first thing is computing heterogeneous infrastructure and software. This is the big elephant in the room. I know that there is a big expertise in hardware in this place. I'm not an expert with that, so I really touch upon it briefly. So the concept of heterogeneous computing is extremely, there are various definitions. There is heterogeneous computing at the level of each node, is how to use efficiently different types of platforms inside the same node. It's a combination of CPUs, GPUs, FPGAs, and future new processors. But the there is a lot of work going on this intermediate level portability libraries, everything that has to do with SQL, COCO, One API, different names, different brands, but is really how to be able to develop code more or less with high level languages that work more or less efficiently on different types of architectures. This is node level. Now, the other type of heterogeneous infrastructure is outside the node. So, as was mentioned, I've been working in grid for many years, 20 years ago. The need for having this workflow and orchestration across the local on-premise and so on was always there, but today is really massive. So what is the relationship between having hardware on-premise, working with cloud providers, working on HPC centers, and now quantum, quantum computer per se, or quantum as accelerators? This is also something that is coming out. And how to allow all this behavior transparently from users and service to service conversations through standard frameworks to use this effectively. And this has also a massive impact on for example, energy consumption and green computing reasoning in the future. So this is an open question. At the node level, there is a lot of software engineering that the experiment are doing today to port, to modify the code, to make it more efficient to work with GPUs. There are many programs starting from event generators or the standard HEP libraries, Jean, Root, and so on to be able to work in this way. And the rest, while the infrastructure part, apart from the technology, has a different level of complexity. Are the networks today able to support this kind of traffic? What are access, inter-domain access mechanisms, policies, financials, business models, and so on? So there is a very big conversation going on. And this is what is the future of the grid and what is the future of the worldwide LHC computing grid, the WCG, in this respect. And of course, there are many European activities. You certainly know about the Euro HPC joint undertaking that is building the, you know, the landscape of European high performance computing, and now superimposed with the high performance and quantum computing centers. So, and there is a big push, of course, to not only industry but all scientific research to be able to access efficiently and use the supercomputing resources that all the countries in Europe, but also everywhere else in the world, are using. Is the HEP community ready for this? This is a very big question. A lot of people are working to understand if this is possible or not, and whether this makes sense or not. Now, machine learning and AI. So, of course, machine learning is not new in the community. There are a lot of work on machine learning that has happened since a long time. Initially, with you know, the more traditional flavor of machine learning, with limited abstraction, limited software engineering, and so on. But this was done for many, many years. Now, let's say after after the 2010, with the advent of accelerated platforms and so on, and the improvement in algorithms, deep learning became very important. It remained for a long time at the level of experimentation or testing. There is very little in production today, but you know, it started pushing the boundary of what is possible a bit farther down the line. And today, suddenly, this is less than 2 years ago, everything changed again. Generative AI, large language model, GPT, foundation model, and so on are now the big trend. And of course, scientific research is not immune from this discussion. So many different types of activities and applications, also to understand what is the impact on the infrastructure and also again on energy consumption and cost. There is 2 weeks ago at CERN, there was the 6th inter-experiment machine learning workshop. If you're interested in machine learning, artificial intelligence for physics, these are 4 days of absolutely everything. You know, if you're interested in that, it's like being a kid in a pastry shop. You go there and there is a bit of everything, and paper, posters, a lot across the entire pipeline of the experiments, from data acquisition to, you know, through reconstruction, analysis, simulation, and everything. So now just a few examples. So foundation model and generative AI, as I mentioned, this, as you know, this came out recently. You know, GPT technology is very recent, and less than 2 years ago, and is already moving very, very quickly. We have a lot of requests to understand whether GPT technology, this kind of pre-trained models, have a role in the community. There are many people experimenting with this for different type of activities, from let me call it basic, it's not trivial, but it's still basic data consumption. You put, you know, feed a GPT model with all the publications we have across the scientific databases or technical information, and see what comes out, if you can ask questions. But then this goes beyond these uses to actual physics applications. So now let me, again, a few examples. GAN-based simulation. This is already traditional, if you want. So this around 2015, 2017, the, you know, GAN is a package used by the experiment, most of them, to do simulation of particle physics within the detectors. It includes the geometry. It includes the simulation of the physics interaction. And in GAN 5, around 2017, was created to accelerate the use of the software on GPUs. So the 5, the V, is GAN V, where the V stands either for the Roman numeral 5, because it comes after GAN 4, but V stands for vectorization as well, because one of the first goals was to actually try to see how to improve efficiency on GPUs. But it started looking at non-Monte Carlo-based simulation, more on deep learning, generative adversarial model, and on small, of course, small models and small parts of the detector. It proved to be extremely efficient, much faster than Monte Carlo method, with less resources and very similar accuracy, of course, on small models. Now, this is going beyond. Now, today, already, nobody talks almost anymore about the generative adversarial network, but they talk about transformer-based simulation. This is, again, from a couple of weeks ago. And the idea of transformers has been moved into, actually, in combination, you see, original DIT paper. DIT is diffusion transformer. I don't know if you're familiar with all these terms, but diffusion is an incredible technique where essentially you create images from nothing. So there is a trick behind, but diffusion means you take random noise, and by reversing the process through which noise has been added previously, you reconstruct an image. It sounds like magic, but the accuracy of what you produce is incredible. It's really, really realistic. So can this, you know, this is done on images, can this be done on the snapshots of a detector of what happens inside the detector? So the same applications that were used to develop the GAN models have been now ported to this kind of transformer-based simulation. And it is even more impressive, the accuracy that you can get, again, on smaller models, because this requires some scalability, but on smaller model is extremely, extremely high, with a smaller number of resources and much, much faster than what you can do today. Of course, not generalizing from the initial task to more you know, more type of task or make them task independent is still a big discussion, but this is a trend that is very, very much accelerating. Jet flavor classification, this is another thing that moved from initial boosted decision trees quite a few years ago along the evolution of technology, now again on transformers, and you can see the trend improvement in performance. This is something that Atlas is looking at. The jet flavor classification is one of the big tasks in the Atlas processing. And this is really becoming, you know, if you see the trend in amplification of the efficiency, this is rather slow. And just in last year or so, you know, it doubles using these technologies. And the interesting thing, this is very, because of what happens outside CERN and outside the community, this is very industry standard. So there are tools that are available in nature that are extremely efficient for implementing and running these kind of processes. So for example, no, Kubeflow is a fully open source project that includes various types of building blocks to actually design and implement very efficient machine learning pipelines. And this has been used as a test, and this has been used already a couple of years ago to take to reproduce the same kind of classification process that we use for certain channels of the Higgs boson decay, to reproduce that with an amplification of I don't have even an order of magnitude. So it's something that would took 2-3 years to analyze the processes, the data in around 2010 or 2011. Today it takes half an hour. So if this can be reproduced on other activities, this would be huge. But of course, there is a huge problem. If we were discussing yesterday, of course, this is an incredible improvement in performance to reproduce something that you already know. You know how it works. If you get the result and the result is comparable, you can say this works. But at the moment, the big problem with this technology is that they are not as trusted or trustable as a more standard method. The whole problem of the trustability of artificial intelligence, of the fact that sometimes you risk confusing the models, risk confusing causality and correlation. This is a big open question. All the discussions about how to understand systematic errors, how to understand uncertainties, is a very big open discussion. But there is a big opportunity if all these problems can be addressed as they were addressed 20 years ago for the existing technologies. If this can be done, then it would be a huge improvement. And even more beyond the transformers, I don't know how familiar you are with this, but foundation model is still based on transformers, but it's simply a sort of multi-transformer technology where you have a different type of data sets. And this is a very interesting work to understand how foundation models, which were born from natural language processing, can be used today for physics analysis. Now, the extremely interesting part of this, which there is a parallelism, which I find impressive because, again, I think that a lot of the work done in physics and high-energy physics or other branches of physics, sometimes really, even without knowing, is years ahead of anything that happens later. But we need to get better at exploiting it. So in this case, the authors of this paper, Fine-Tuning Foundation Model for Analysis Optimization, they found that the the current architecture of the latest foundation models, how the pipelines are designed, it matches almost one-to-one the data processing patterns of the experiments which was designed 20 and more years ago. That is incredible. I mean, it's something that you know, it means that the thinking of the solid reasoning was already there since the beginning. But this new technology gives a lot of improvement. For example, today you have the reconstruction process, you know, the typical process apart from data acquisition, but you typically start with reconstructing the tracks in the accelerators, in the detectors, to create a sort of baseline. This gives indications of what might possibly have happened inside the detector. And then based on what you get, you specialize those results during analysis to backtrack the process from the tracks back to the original collision and what was produced after the collision. So it's sort of backtracking the physics process by forward tracking the computing. But this is today's done in two steps. So first you do the reconstruction, then you get the reconstruction, and based on the result of the reconstruction, you do the analysis. Using this kind of technology, it might be possible to put the two together. So to actually optimize together using this kind of foundation model, the reconstruction and the analysis, so that it is a continuous training process that in the models investigated today, again, has better accuracy, is much faster, and it uses less resources. So these are trends that are very, very promising, especially for high luminosity LHC, on which it is needed to invest from a technology point of view, scientific point of view, computer science point of view, and education point of view, because these are new techniques that not everybody is familiar with. Very quickly, other applications. So that's for physics, but we are trying something like this for infrastructure, for example. This is a project a couple of years ago to use reinforcement learning networks to predict the network behavior. As a precursor, for example, you know, bandwidth might become expensive. So can we assess whether, you know, some peaks in bandwidth are coming? So we can, for example, buy on-demand bandwidth across different circuits. Is you know, it's very interesting, and also avoid the bottlenecks. Beyond physics, same technology. This is work we are doing with the United Nations or UNITAR organization to improve the way satellite images are analyzed. This is something we did that improved by more than 10 times the speed of analysis of images to help understanding the needs on the ground. For example, when the United Nations need to deploy aid on the ground in case of a natural disaster, floods, and so on. And climate prediction, this is becoming extremely big, extremely important. Can we predict better the climate extreme phenomenon? And also in this case, mechanisms like transformers, self-attention, etc., are becoming extremely promising. So short term, 6 hours, 12 hours, but by using this already, the methods on short term, the results produced by this network exceeds the standard numerical solution provided by standard meteorological organizations today. And digital twins, you know, this is yet another evolution. Can we put all that together, foundation model, transformers, a lot of different data to create the digital twins of what we do? So this is already here today. This is a sort of digital twin of, in this case, is the SPN, is the super proton synchrotron. And this is done to have, this is a shot, is a picture, but is navigable, is a tool that you can navigate, and you can zoom on different parts and call up the part number of the different pieces and help the technicians understand what they have to touch and repair. But then the next step is to put together the kind of simulation I showed you earlier with this, really to have a complete package to simulate the physics processes within the different accelerators and detectors almost in real time. Quantum computing. So this is the other big technology. So as I mentioned, so we designed the CERN technology initiative 4 years ago. It went on for 3 years and with the four goals of scientific and technology development, but a lot of co-development and community community building and integration with the national initiatives and programs. We went through a very large number of projects and collaborations. I think, you know, I don't remember, but there were more than 600 publications in 3 years. So it was really impressive with many different institutes and organizations. But what about the future? So the idea is, about 2 years ago, we created a quantum computing for high-energy physics work group across Europe, US, and Canada to try to understand the state of the art and the next possible step of applications of quantum computing. So this team has regularly met regularly every 3 to 6 months, and we published this quantum computing paper with this preliminary analysis, and then the different groups have started creating prototypes, proof of concepts of these possible applications. So the paper classifies a number of phenomena in theory, a number of activities in particle physics, in experimental physics, that classify the type of problem and what are the possible applications of quantum computing algorithms and technology to solve these problems. And a few examples, and again, you know, you're much better physicist than I am, but you know, simulation of real-time phenomenon, this is a big problem today. You know, there are many techniques if you want to go beyond more static problems and, you know, non-perturbative theory. There are many problems, numerical problems to solve. But if this is reformulated with different approaches, for example, Hamiltonian, discretized Hamiltonian, you can use a variety of quantum methods that are quite powerful. You know, apart from the number of qubits that are available today, these are quite powerful to investigate different, you know, out of equilibrium situation on various size, lattice size, and also long range interactions. It doesn't necessarily have to be real quantum. So for low entanglement, there are also quantum inspired technologies, tensor networks that are becoming very, very interesting and very promising, and then quantum computer for later. Neutrino oscillation, this is more astrophysics problem, but again, this is an interesting example. You know that neutrinos morph into each other while they travel in space, and they interact in various ways between each other, and interact with vacuum, etc. Also in this case, it is possible to create a Hamiltonian and map individual neutrinos on individual qubits. Again, the number of qubits today is not really is not really possible to do this, but as a theoretical problem, this is actually possible. And then the solution becomes not only interesting, but it allows to work more on the dynamics of this, so to different boundary conditions, what happens not only when the neutrinos travel in space, but what happens when they are produced within the neutron stars and exit in different density conditions. For experimental physics, anomaly detection and rare signal extraction is another interesting opportunity. There are already implementations for this kind of approaches that use different techniques, kernel machines, clustering, quantum clustering algorithms. But this is becoming very important to be able to go beyond. So you know, one of the major problems today is the physics process is rather biased. You know, we look for things that we can describe, are part of the standard model, there are models or series of models. But going beyond what is possible today, what the model can predict today is rather difficult. So there is a tendency, there is a trend of going the other direction, do anomaly detection, discard everything that we know of, and try and see what is left, weak interacting particles or phenomena that are not easily described. So a number of quantum methods are available for doing this. And there is a trend which is not formally proven, but there is a observations that these quantum algorithms have a better representational power. So you can use less data to extract information, but also it is possible they seem to be exploiting inherent being quantum, they exploit quantum correlation in the data that classical method cannot exploit because you turn first the quantum data into classical data and you lose this information. So again, interesting direction to explore. And this is another, you know, this is for reconstruction, similar approaches. Instead of using Kalman filters for reconstruction, this kind of classical methods, same thing, you can map different tracks with different qubits and study the behavior of the different qubits using various techniques, quantum optimization or unconstrained optimization. So again, these are not implemented today. These are trends. There are small proof of concept, but these are what the authors of the paper, you know, 47 people across the different institutes, are suggesting as the interesting lines of exploration. And but also for the accelerator is another example. This is quantum reinforcement learning. This is how to drive the beams inside the accelerator so that they collide in the most efficient way on the fixed target. And by using reinforcement learning was already used, and the people responsible for various beam lines, including the awake beam line at CERN, have implemented a hybrid quantum classic method that using adiabatic computers, that is, in their world, quantum reinforcement learning massively outperforms classical algorithms in terms of model size, etc. So again, this is already a practical implementation which uses adiabatic computer, not general purpose, but is already quite efficient. So, why CERN is involved in this, I think is becoming clear. So of course, we split this in two parts. One is quantum technology for HEP, how quantum technology can use high energy physics, and the other one is how high energy physics can do for improving and contributing to the development of quantum technology. So the phase two of the quantum technology initiative has these two main principles, and is structured. This is the next 5-year phase. It's structured on four main areas. One is quantum networks and communication, which will focus especially initially on creating or contributing to the creation of a network able to distribute very precise time and frequency signals across a European collaboration of clock synchronization, again to go beyond the locality of the time of the LHC accelerator and allow large distributed experiments for gravitational waves or interferometry of various types, and later on, if this works, start looking at how quantum states can be propagated through real quantum networks and maybe used to link different quantum systems across a distributed infrastructure. The hybrid quantum computing and algorithms is what sits on top of that. Is about algorithms, not only their efficient implementation for experiments, but also how to deploy these algorithms on the HPC quantum infrastructure that Europe and other countries are building. Quantum technology platforms is more the hardware part. This is more about atomic clocks and possibly nuclear clocks in the future, or specific cryogenics, electronics, superconducted cavities, different types of qubits. There are ideas to experiment with isotopes. But again, the idea, to be clear, CERN doesn't plan to build a quantum computer at all. The idea is to experiment with technology for which there is a solid expertise at CERN, and then distribute this knowledge across the other laboratories and collaborate. And the fourth part is collaboration for impact. This is a quite new, quite interesting, is really to go beyond, again, because of the mission to support open science, how to go beyond physics. So this is how this is expected to work. Of course, it's not direct, but the idea is quantum networks will feed into the historical work done by the LHC network activity, same for computing and WCG, and for technology in the different research programs. Now, in order to go beyond something that the Quantum Technology Initiative bootstrapped, created as part of the initial reasoning, is the creation of something called the Open Quantum Institute. So the idea is that in order to, quantum computing gives a lot of opportunities, but is rather expensive and difficult to use. So how do we stimulate the adoption of quantum computing beyond physics, beyond the standard sciences, material science or chemistry? And the idea was to create, in collaboration with a Swiss foundation called JESTA, what is called the Open Quantum Institute, which is not a separate institute, is as of March will become a CERN program. But the idea is to collaborate with with companies and laboratories to actually accelerate quantum computing application for societal purposes. So these are the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals are the guidelines for this collaboration, which is an international collaboration for applications like you know, energy distribution grids, material science, fertilizer, efficient fertilizer for agriculture, optimization, medical applications. So there are many different proposals. And this is done, as I mentioned, in collaboration with a number of institutes and international organizations and companies. But it's also, you know, we managed to collaborate to work with the foundation to actually put some financial motivation into this. So proposals will be, there will be a committee that evaluates proposals coming from institutes all over the world. And there are foundations that are giving a sort of prize at the end for the best project. And we are talking, I don't know if you're familiar with XPRIZE, but we are talking about, you know, it's not the same, not quality. I mean, it's not the same honor, but is financially speaking, we are talking about a Nobel Prize level. So it is $1 million level prizes for the project that really demonstrate how quantum computing can impact society. Now, and finally, you know, I want to say a few words about carbon awareness and energy consumption. I mean, this is, again, is becoming very strong. If you know the trends in computing and storage, but until a few years ago with the CPUs, more performance didn't necessarily mean more energy. With you know, with GPUs and other devices today, that is not the case. If you want more performance, you know, the curve is actually exponentially increasing. So if we want to enable all this nice behavior of artificial intelligence, deep learning, transformers, etc., it might come at the cost of spending a lot of energy producing a lot of CO2. So CERN has started already CERN-wide green activities everywhere to reduce every type of consumption or pollution. But in particular, energy and carbon awareness are very important. So for the in terms of computing, we are working on four different areas. One is service operation, which is about how to optimize the operations in the data center, for example, by changing the temperature of the speed dynamically of the different assets to compensate also the cost and time of the day. Green procurement, this is to buy from countries, companies that have pledged to compensate carbon in carbon production. But the rest, you know, the other two is really about, you know, the first one, software and sustainable AI. And, you know, this is how we are implementing it. It was an assessment. We are implementing a few prototypes, and the idea next year, this should become more integrated in everything we do. But especially in terms of energy efficient software engineering, sustainable AI, again, there is a lot of activity today. You know, maybe you are familiar with EBSCoR 23 is the standard for benchmarking activities across the infrastructure. So the experiments measure the performance in terms of number of EBSCoRs. And the idea is to include in the benchmarking, not only the performance, but also the consumption. So you can trade if you want more performance at the cost of consuming more, or if you accept lower performance for less consumption, or you want to change this dynamically. So this benchmarking creates all the baseline and measurements for doing that. And then we have started together with the community to review, revise, redesign all the packages, all the software, so they can be optimally used on this newer generations of GPUs and performant devices. And for AI is the same. So AI, there is a big trend in doing what is called architecture aware AI today. So enable for artificial intelligence, you don't always need the GPUs. So there are many, you know, as part of typical pipelines, there are many activities for which standard CPUs are good enough. So instead of having a single platform, how can the pipelines be automatically segmented and classified and dispatched to different types of architectures where the energy consumption is optimal or trade between, again, performance and consumption can be obtained. So all this is work in progress, but it will be more and more attention on this will come in the future, not only at CERN, but also from a funding agency, for example, to demonstrate that there is an attention at this as part of a project, as part of a grant. So to conclude, you know, I give you a really broad overview of everything that we are looking at. Okay, and we can discuss about specific things, but the main message is that, you know, innovation really is a continuous process. It happens everywhere. It happens from messages, you know, from exchanges, from within organization, across organization, with industry, with things that maybe are don't seem related, cannot be forced, but has to be supported. If there is no support, I don't know if I'm not a big fan of hackathons, for example. I don't know if anybody here is a big fan of hackathons. I like very much the hackathon, but very typically at the end of a hackathon, have you ever seen something coming out of a hackathon and really becoming something? I don't have, maybe you're lucky. I've never seen that because there is very difficult to understand how to support these initial ideas, this kind of incubation thing. It's a lot about technology, but it's also a lot about mentality. Okay? If we say, I've never used this, will certainly never work, is not the way I do things, then of course nothing moves. Sometimes we need to be a bit brave and accept that we need to fail a number of times before something succeeds, and thinking out of the box. And of course, the best ingredient is talk, share, collaborate, put together projects, share expertise. We need to accept that we don't know everything under the sun. So maybe there is someone we can talk to complement what we know. And then the magic works and we certainly have better things in the future. Thank you.
Are there any questions? It's somewhat outside of IT question, but maybe related. Can these systems or methods, large language, whatever, discover inconsistency in the feeded data or true lies or something like that?
So yes, the short answer is yes. But again, it's all a matter of how they have been trained. So there are actually a lot of investigations today to understand exactly how to do that. For example, you know, there are techniques called masked transformers, where you remove from text, in the case of natural language processing or something else, words that you know are correct, and see how the system reacts and replaces them with the correct word, and then you reverse the process to understand how the anomalies are detected. So that is something that is.
Then we have problems now.
So the knowledge, the training always comes from previous knowledge, but the important part are the correlation. So knowledge. So everything is there. This is a fact. I mean, maybe someone will contradict me, but I don't think that these methods today can really discover completely new things. But they can discover correlations among things that we cannot see because there is too much data or because the connections are too distant. So these methods are excellent at finding this correlation. So you see new things that you were not able to see before. They were there, but you could not see them. But they make a lot of mistakes as well. I mean, just to if you want to do a small experiment with some mathematics, it's very, very easy. But if you go to ChatGPT and you say, ChatGPT, you have these five numbers. Tell me what is the series, or the form of the series that these five numbers. The start of the conversation is amazing. You know, it's very competent. Ah, okay, we can apply the difference method, etc. And if the difference method of first order doesn't work, you can apply a second order. Fantastic. Then you see the calculations completely wrong. It says, no, the reasoning is perfect, but then 5 minus 2 is not 3, is something else. Because the actual, because it's not a mathematical, ChatGPT doesn't do the mathematical calculation, it creates a sequence of things. So for some reason, at least in the experiment I tried, that sequence of words was very like, had a very high likelihood of happening. Okay, so, I mean, we are not there with production systems, but the potential is interesting.
Thank you for the very nice talk, Alberto. I From your talk, I understood it very much the structure that once you have the big data and then you have the network, you have the evaluation method in the computing, IT, whatever, and then even to understand the data with these novel technologies. I cannot really see at the moment that how the generation of the data will change, for example, with the quantum technologies. So can you say something on that, how the detectors developments can be, how more efficient detectors can be made, or what are the things which will boost the original thing? Because so far from this talk, what we see that we will have the ancient technology for the high luminosity, at least we see improving the luminosity, but nothing else. So how it is?
So, okay, so this is more on the sensing part, etc. So I didn't cover that part. But there are, again, I don't know everything that is happening everywhere, but I can tell you what, you know, part of the projects that are done in the Quantum Technology Initiative. So there are activities that try to extend to higher energy applications, phenomena that are known. So we're describing earlier to some of you, but you know, two examples. One is what we call the chromatic detection. So the idea is that if you can build, I mean, it's an engineering problem, technology exists, but it's an engineering problem. But if you can build a sort of array of nanodots, you can work on the frequency, on the color of the light, of the frequency emitted by a nanodot by working on the size of the cavity. So if you can build reliably a matrix where the size changes regularly across the axis, then by detecting the color of the light emitted, you know where the exciting particle has gone through. So by doing this, if you can do this, these devices are extremely fast in switching, and you can have a very, very high resolution and have a very low energy activation threshold. So you can, for example, detect a very weakly interacting particles. Theoretical, of course, this doesn't exist, but it's a direction to use this kind of nano quantum technology for new type of detectors. Gaseous detectors, same thing with, for example, with excited atoms, Rydberg or other type of excited atoms, which have a very low energy activation threshold. Can this become a new type of detectors? Scintillators of various types, crystals, etc. So all these technologies are being assessed as part of the Quantum Technology Initiative to see what is their potential, theoretical at first, and then it becomes an engineering problem to understand how to build them, how to connect them, what is exactly, what are the parameters of performance. So these are building blocks for future design of detectors based on what we do and what we know today. There probably are many other things. And then soon after, I mean, this is not quantum, it's more artificial intelligence. I don't know if I can extend your question. There is it was mentioned that I'm following as of January, this new Next Gen Trigger project, which has to be announced. I cannot say very much, but the idea there is really to understand how to improve the capabilities of the triggers, both from hardware and software point of view, to be able to analyze much more data, much more quickly than what is possible today. So instead of discarding 98% of the data that goes through the data acquisition process, if you can analyze that and do anomaly detection at that point and try to do it model neutral, model free, not because you're looking for something, but because you want to find something that you never observed before, that will change as well how this is done. So again, these are all directions of investigations and that, you know, support the design of new detectors and data acquisition systems in the future.
Thank you. Are there questions from outside? Anybody? Anybody inside? If not, then thank you, Alberto, for coming.
Sure. It was a pleasure.